Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to review AEW Rampage. What did you make of this week's show, and how much of a difference is this to your Friday nights when not watching SmackDown?
I mean, they're vastly different questions, so I'll try and answer the first one first before I just descend in over praise for if I answer the second one. It was all right, wasn't it? It was all right. I'm not going to do egregious backflips like half the roster would. Like, it's I don't know. This could be a subjective take, maybe it's not. I feel as though still Rampage leaves you feeling full when it comes to AEW, rather than hungry for a little bit more, as a really great Dynamite, such as this. Well, not the episode was great, but certainly the Dynamite main event made you like desperate for more AEW content. Couldn't say enough good things about it. And yet we get to Rampage, and it's the taped vibe, something we talked about in the preview, which is that when nothing has burst forth from the taping reports.
Why has no one talked about this, by the way? That main event, but anyway.
Really good, but yeah, like it does lower the ceiling and everything, which I guess it did for the main event here. I don't know. Maybe there isn't a problem to fix. Maybe AEW have established a nice holding pattern, but our standards are higher with AEW, so maybe sometimes nice doesn't feel enough, and that's why almost nothing on this show warrants criticism. And in contrast, to sort of build on your second question, in contrast to SmackDown, where there is something every week that you could just, you're scratching your head or you're banging off a table.
Yeah, it's the best show of the week, but there's still stuff to critique, yeah.
There's that guy, our podcast host.
Hey.
Number one podcast in the charts for a reason. SmackDown will give you all, like, it very occasionally gives you the best of WWE, but more often than not gives you the worst too. Rampage is never that. But it's also never the best of AEW. And I want to feel that sometimes. I want to get what a Dynamite will, even a bad Dynamite will still give you something that is, well, there's going to be nothing better about wrestling this week. I want Rampage to offer that, and I just don't feel like I'm getting it ever, really. And this episode didn't have that. Had a couple of really cool standout moments that I'm looking forward to isolating for significant praise. But as an hour, I'll just say I'm glad it's an hour.
Yes. Rollercoaster, there's some great stuff in there for me. And then some other stuff that I thought, ooh, we're going to have a chat about this on Monday. Well, we'll dive into it when we get there. The show opened immediately with Adam Cole making his entrance to take on Evil Uno. The commentators point out that he lost 9 days ago to Orange Cassidy, but it doesn't affect his win-loss record because that's how this works.
Yep.
And a bit of me there, as much as I enjoyed the loss at the time, I thought, you know what, that's fine. Did feel a little bit desperate. I thought they brought it back with Cole's promo, but there was a bit of me when I was like, who are you trying to convince here? Me or yourselves?
You can't be the only one. I've said it before on other
podcasts. Who's in charge here? Me or the devil?
Double eight. I like this, but as I've sort of tried to clarify when I've mentioned this on other podcasts, I do understand the criticism of those that don't. I think they've established now fairly robustly what are you going to get either side of the lights out. If the babyface wins, unfortunately, that doesn't give them what they want. If the heel wins, or if the heel loses, that means that they can use it as an excuse. It's cute, but this is the reason why you can't do the lights out match very often, because the more you do it, the more you, like, and I'm saying, I'm not just saying the general, I mean you, Adam Wilborn, might slightly feel like you're starting to have the piss taken out of you.
Yeah. But I did like the way they booked this match, in that it wasn't a long match and Adam Cole just got out all of his frustrations effectively on poor Evil Uno. Cole starts off with a pump kick, just starts battering him all over the place. Uno did get some shine. He fought back. He hit a hanging neck breaker. He hit a clothesline. He was stomping on Adam Cole in the corner, finally getting a bit of his own back. But as he goes for a senton, Cole gets his knees up. High knee from him. Super kick. Two super kicks, in fact. And then he lowers the boom to get the 1-2-3 in like 2.5 minutes. I'll get your thoughts on the match as well as his promo, because he immediately grabbed a mic and mentioned Frankie Kazarian, Jungle Boy, Anthony Green, John Silver, Wheeler Yuta, Orange Cassidy, Jake Atlas, Trent Barretta, and now Evil Uno. What do all these men have in common? They are all involved in my undefeated singles run in AEW. I don't give a damn about what happened last week, he says. I am the new Adam Cole, a more ruthless Adam Cole. I'm going to take what I want. I'm one of the best pro wrestlers, not just in AEW, but on the planet. I've traveled the globe for years, won championships after championships for years. At the end of the day, I always become the guy, no matter the brand, promotion, or show. And something else he wants, he is going, he promises, to become AEW world champion.
I loved all of this, and I loved all of it so much that I know I'm destined to forget explaining one of the reasons why, because there was just so many. I loved how short this match was. First of all, because I was thinking about after Punk and MJF. Like, it's not necessarily anybody's job to think about this, but it's just, I guess literally it is ours sometimes, but like, I like to think about this. From a production standpoint, it was going to be incredibly hard to follow CM Punk versus MJF. If you imagine being in the building, having just watched, what, 47 minutes?
Something like that, yeah.
A 47-minute experience, certainly. A real emotional ride as well. To then have to suddenly, right, while they change the banners, calm yourself down to build yourself back up for a match. That was going to be a struggle, and I thought to myself, Rampage is going to struggle as a result of this. How does anything follow it? Well, 2.5 minutes featuring an entrance that you can pop for is the perfect way to follow it. So they absolutely...
Palette cleanser.
Absolutely. Like, in terms of like constructing this as a live experience, which then has to translate to television, absolutely nailed it. And not just from a production standpoint. A criticism that we've levied at AEW quite a bit lately is stop showing us the graphic where it's obvious exactly who's going to win, winner versus star, and then making them go 10 minutes to create the idea that it's not. Like, if you're going to show me a graphic where I absolutely 100% know who's going over, give me a match that shows that as well, which is what this did. I like Evil Uno, but it would have been a little bit condescending to me as a viewer, I think, to have watched this go 9 minutes and get a bit back and forthy when we know that Cole's gone over with the boom. So I'm glad they kind of instead used the time, not only again for the from a production standpoint to the crowd, but in terms of as a television viewer to get to the point of his promo as well, which again, I worry that I'll miss out what I loved about this. So number one, content delivery was just excellent. Adam Cole is a top guy, and there's been a lot of criticisms about apparently him being used a little bit too comedically, or that there's a bit too much fluff and nonsense around his run because he's been, you know, dressing up as a Ghostbuster, having fun with the Unbox. So I don't agree with that criticism, but it's out there, and a lot of people, you know, have gravitated towards this belief that AEW maybe not using him as an inbuilt star like NXT did. That's up for debate. I didn't think that was an issue, but this promo directed, like, was to them, wasn't it? A lot of the content in this promo was a head-on addressing of that complaint. So you would like to think that if that complaint has been made in good faith, it will have been satiated.
Yes.
If it's been made bad faith, you can piss off. But the people that genuinely felt it, hopefully they've heard this and they've heard it loud and clear. Number two, another complaint that is being levied at AEW is the idea that you've had it a lot, particularly with the tag team titles recently, but we've had it with various title matches in the past. People come on TV and tell you they're the number one contenders, and you go, how's that then? And it's because Excalibur tells you they've got an 18-0 record because of these dark and dark elevation matches you've never seen. Not Adam Cole. He lists off these names of wrestlers that he's beaten. So even if you've not watched the matches, you're like, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's a laundry list of wrestlers. But they are matches you have watched, because almost all of them have taken place on Dynamite or Rampage. So not only is he giving you the reason why he's a number one contender, it feels completely different to, for example, Private Party saying, We're number one contenders.
Yeah.
I know records have reset, but Cole is working around that. He's saying this has nothing to do with records being reset. Look at what I've done since I've been here. So that is to, that's not just to the people who think he's not been getting on with business. It's to people like us who think, where's that record come from? Mm. So I love that too. Number three, the diluting of the Orange Cassidy victory was done in the most passive aggressive of ways that hypothetically, should Adam Cole defeat Hangman Page, Orange Cassidy is going to be back in the conversation for a title shot. Like, I don't think Adam Cole versus Orange Cassidy resonated as much as it should have done. That was a more exciting thing to talk about before it happened than actually after the fact,
yeah,
in my opinion. But in the hypothetical scenario that Adam Cole becomes AEW World Champion, Cole and Cassidy is right back there as a premium, I was going to say premium live event there, but a premium concern for a Dynamite title shot off something like that. I just think this was so economical in terms of its use of Adam, yeah, Cole. We know that Paige is beating Lance Archer on Dynamite. So why not as good as foreshadow it with a promo of this standard? Couldn't have faulted everything in the way that Adam Cole was presented here. I think some of it was a pushback to criticism. I think some of it was just because you've got Adam Cole and there isn't much he can't do. Mm. So just use every aspect of him over, like I say, 8 or 9 hugely economical minutes. There was a lot of love for a match on this show for reasons that we will get to. But in terms of top guys doing top guy stuff, this was it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It sort of potentially lays the path out for an attack following the Texas Deathmatch. Him talking about how ruthless, yeah, it's going to be. And as much as he can insist he's the number one contender, if you bat someone, the stats back it up anyway, but also you've got the animosity there as well, and he's just murdered one of his... Like we said, we don't want him to run through all of the Dark Order. That's been done. But yeah, kick the crap out of one of his best mates and then attack him within the space of 5 days.
The best is always both. The best is always both.
Also, I really like this because I, for a split second, thought he was calling out Frankie Kazarian. He grabs the mic and says, Frankie Kazarian. I was like, what's happening?
We don't need to go back and revisit any of the Elite Hunter stuff. No, it's the best is always both. Brian and Paige showed us that, yes, you can start with a title match. Like, they could have fought on night one. Hangman just could have got his gear and all that sort of thing. But Brian made it personal with the Dark Order stuff, and then you've got an angle as well as a title match. The attack, as you've pitched there, this is Ric Flair and Randy Savage being announced for WrestleMania, and then Ric Flair saying, by the way, I shagged your wife before you. Like, you didn't have to do that. Like, the title match was already booked. But he just thought, I'll go in my back pocket and see if I can undermine him before the match. Adam Cole decking Hangman Page after he's won, theoretically, a grueling Texas Death Match is one thing. But as you say, when the stats are there to back it up, Page has got both a justifiable reason to want to attack him as well as the forced reason to defend his title against him.
Plus, imagine how good that hair's going to look of Hangman Page's if it's covered in blood already and then they hit the... It's called the high-low? I never know what it's called.
Red Dragon, yeah. It used to be Total Elimination by the Eliminators.
That's what I'm thinking, mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, we'll save that for the Dynamite preview later on this week. We got a nice little vignette from Jade Cargill talking about becoming 27-0. People say she's green, right? She's green like money.
Amazing. Really great.
And then we got a TNT, the first of two championship matches, the TNT championship match. Isaiah Cassidy, inexplicably the number one contender, versus Sammy Guevara. Had quite a few issues with this. Not necessarily the match, just everything that happened around it. Question number one, why has he got two belts? Why has he got two belts, Michael Hamlet?
I know how annoyed you are by this. To the point where when you said the first of two title, I just thought you were going to say, first two titles, both of which are on Sammy Guevara's waist. No, I don't know why.
Why has he got two? Why? I get it. He was interim champion, right? Fair enough. And on the night he wins the TNT championship, absolutely have both of them over his shoulder. What's the point of this? I'm really hung up on this watching it. I literally got angry before the match started. I was like, why is he wearing two? You're not Conor McGregor. You're not Becky Lynch. You've just got a title and a placeholder, effectively.
One is effectively a replica belt.
It's like
at this point,
walking
isn't it?
Around with the Money in the Bank briefcase after you won the world title. What are you doing?
It's a prop rather than it.
It just also made the visual weird where Darby Allin was like, hey, I won these two titles. No, you don't. You won one of them.
Is it because it just looks good?
But it's bollocks. It's bollocks.
Here we go.
And I hold AEW to a better standard than that.
Is this the first time we're going to get Broken Adam Wilborn on something related to AEW?
No, I'm not getting that wound up. But stop wearing both belts. You don't need to wear both belts.
I'm fine.
Like, I don't know what else I can compare it to. Like, in UFC, where they do have interim titles, the only pass that I gave AEW for the 1 week that Cody couldn't wrestle or whatever, but they don't go, well, There you go. One round your waist, one over your shoulder. They go, you were interim.
Yeah,
champion.
The second one is very much not a prize, is it?
No. The whole point is interim, which means you're next in line when the champion comes back. And then you fight. And I get having both titles up there because one of them's gone over. You know, like...
It's a mimicking of the Razor Ramon thing. It's a nice visual.
I've got a title. Yep. Well, that's not the real title. This is the real title. Stop wearing the second one. Like... What are you doing? Sorry, I don't know why that...
I love it. I love this. I love this because my gut feeling is that this is going nowhere. And I think you're like going to get more and more amped up with this.
Furious every week.
Sammy Tuvara.
Like, oh, God. Anyway, but the match was great because it's Isaiah Cassidy and Sammy Guevara working together. Guevara's ribs were taped, still selling the effects of the ladder match that went down 9 days ago. And it didn't really stop him early on. He had Tope Suicida over the ropes onto Isaiah Cassidy and then kipped up. So not that hurting, those ribs. Yeah. Anyway, we come back to the ring. Guevara dodges a charge from Cassidy, hits a Gamanguri. But then Mark Quinn takes the referee and Hardy hits Guevara with a side effect on the ring apron. And I thought, oh, here we bloody go.
This neck history, I'm amazed it like, didn't give him a neck injury or something like that.
We come back from the break and Guevara's fighting back after being beaten down throughout it. Escapes a back suplex. Hits Cassidy with clotheslines and a ripcord knee strike. Goes for the GTH, but his ribs give out, so he can't hold him up there. Cassidy recognizes this and attacks. Drives an elbow into the ribs. Guevara fights back. Super kick. Goes up top. But then, all of a sudden, Andrade's music plays. This distracts Sammy. I can already see your face and can't wait to see what to say about this. That allows Cassidy to catch him with a sling blade, backbreaker, backstabber, nice near fall, although I knew he wasn't losing the title. Guevara rolls to the ring apron. He tried to springboard back into the ring, but Cassidy catches him with a cutter. Tope Suicida onto the floor and a senton atomico back in the ring for another near fall. Andrade and Jose are there encouraging Isaiah Cassidy. Guevara, though, tries to steal one with a backslide. He hits an enziguri on Cassidy, takes out Mark Quinn with a huge moonsault to the floor, and then hits the double jump springboard cutter on Cassidy. And just to finish the whole thing off, gets him up, powers him up. GTH, 1, 2, 3. I'll get your thoughts on it because I want to talk as well about the other bit post-match that also really wound me up.
Yeah, right. Just lift the bollocks out of this for a second because we'll get to the bollocks, right? But... This match crystallizes an issue. I don't review Rampage with you most weeks. We fart about talking about WWE. But this, I think, crystallized my feelings on Rampage in general. This was empty calorie wrestling. And I guess I mean that literally to look at these two men. They've never seen a calorie in their goddamn life. Their bodies are amazing. But this was empty calorie wrestling to a fault in the... Remember when NXT was still good? Right, and not the good that we appreciate through your sound effects and our games and our silly voices, but when it was good, but that was becoming a problem.
Yes,
what is good anymore? Like good's every week, good's this. It's repetitive. It's over and over again. Nothing means anything. I don't need 15 minutes. That I need 5 because I need something to be good creatively rather than just good. Good by committee, which is what NXT was becoming. This was cool wrestling by committee. You highlighted it in your recap. Like, don't not sell those ribs. Otherwise, you're not selling the ribs. I know that sounds really obvious. Tape isn't enough if you're going to do kip-ups. If you're going to resort to the move that you theoretically can't do and do it anyway. They're going to do it anyway, right? You've proven that you've got loads of ways to beat these guys. And AEW is really cool at establishing different ways to beat wrestlers because that creates more suspenseful kickouts in big matches, right? That's what's awesome about wrestlers having multiple finishes or beating wrestlers with your signature, not always your finisher.
Yes.
Use that, right? And if Sammy Guevara, as a babyface, is wanting to show guts and guile and determination, I would understand that had he not done a kip-up to suggest, well, the ribs are fine. Like, there's way too much that's not joined up, but it just kind of looks cool on the screen, and it's how much you're going to really be receptive to the cool stuff. And that's maybe why I sometimes feel a bit overstuffed with Rampage by the end of my AEW viewing week, and I did here. It was nice to see Cassidy in... Private Party don't have any more these particularly, well, very literally in the case, I was going to say memorable, but then you made the point that, like, I don't remember seeing these guys wrestling that a year, and now they're more contenders. But Private Party, even if they were around, you wouldn't necessarily feel like they were involved in anything memorable. I really enjoyed seeing Isaiah Cassidy in a singles match, and I wonder if, I'm not suggesting necessarily splitting Private Party permanently, but I wonder if there was a bit of an FTR thing. Remember when they felt like they had a bit of stink on them, and then you were seeing them in like breakout singles stuff, and you were just a bit of a break from the team to see them being their best selves in singles action, then they come back together again, and you kind of love them a bit more. You feel like you're emotionally invested, and Cassidy is going to be in there. Face the Revolution qualifier, and so maybe that's a tactic which I, you know, again, that's only speculation on my part, but I quite like that. I like flashes of what I got here, but felt nothing for them doing very flashy stuff, and that's the worst kind of reaction to flashy stuff. So I don't have a lot of good to say about this. The bollocks is a bad habit that needs to go away pronto. The bollocks, for those that don't listen to us regularly, by which I mean pretty much everything involving Matt Hardy, always. That's always the bollocks on an AEW show. It's nonsense, it's fluff, it's an accessory to the actual pro wrestling. Andrade has been wrapped up in that. He is starting to feel like a figure of fun rather than somebody to get serious, rather than somebody to get... Is that what it is? Is that who Andrade is? Have they looked at Andrade and thought... Have they looked at those some of those performances that were a little bloated, a little gassy, and thought... He's not what we thought we were getting. We can't put him in the main events, so instead we'll put him in with the comedic fools, because that's what I felt like I was getting here. And it occurred to me that we kind of talk about Andrade with a bit of an NXT 2.0 glare, don't we? It's not like we're not going, oh man, I cannot wait to see Andrade get serious and hook it up with CM Punk. We say, I wish to buy that boy, and put on a funny voice about his motivations or whatever. And I, like, this was, you bring him out in music to do a wacky distraction, and then there's bollocks on the outside, and it's leading to bollocks. And what you're going to review might get us to something that felt very unbollocks in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
But what's the end game with any of this? That's actually, let's do that bit, because I kind of, there's two very distinct directions for a wrestler here, and we need to kind of unpack what direction they're going to go in.
So yeah, post-match, Sammy's got the win, and then Andrade and Matt Hardy, it looks like they're going to organise themselves and the entire of the AHFO to attack Sammy Guevara, which makes Chris Jericho, leader of the Inner Circle, best friend of Sammy Guevara, stand up.
Who is sick of the lack of unity in the Inner Circle to the point where he's had a team meeting booked for next Wednesday.
Just stood up. Didn't do anything. Didn't even take his fucking headset off. Just stood up and went, they better not. Well, there's five of them, Chris. Probably are.
Probably going to do something.
Jose's probably going to hit him with something.
If only you were in a stable and knew how stables acted, Chris.
And then Darby Allin runs out to make the save. That was nice. And, you know, there's a little moment with Andrade and Jose. Mm-hmm. And Darby, of course, they still want to sign the little boy. And then there's a wonderful moment where I forgive everything that's preceded it, because we get a stare down between Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara. Darby Allin wants his TNT championship back, effectively. Which one? Why are there two belts on his shoulders?
Right, so, yeah. This is kind of what I'm talking about with the bollocks. Was this the moment that, you know, like every week we say, the Andrade stuff's rubbish, but like, isn't Andrade Darby Allin at the pay-per-view going to be really, really cool? Is this the week, was this the episode, or was this the moment that they relegated Darby Allin and Andrade, or more specifically Andrade, to the setup guy role, to the funny guy role.
Yeah, maybe.
To put this on the pay-per-view instead. By this, I mean the Allin-Sammy Guevara rematch. They fought at Revolution.
They referenced the
Revolution 2020 in the same building that this Rampage took place in, I think.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? And back then it was like very early Four Pillars stuff. Some people on some podcasts were referring to them as Pillars, but it wasn't being used, it wasn't canonized on AEW television by them. So that felt at the time like you're watching the foundation of AEW's future happening, and now we're getting to see fruits of that labour in the form of these two people that are almost, they're not bigger yet than the TNT title, but they feel like this is very much part of the journey rather than their eventual destination, this TNT title. But certainly with Andrade very literally moved to the floor while these two men can have this face-off, was this the marginalisation of Andrade into the Matt Hardy orbit permanently rather than the, you know, get excited for Andrade and Darby Allin's ripper. Is that not going to be set up fodder stuff? Now, I watched this.
Maybe Dave Meltzer will give that match 5 stars and we can work out who he won't give 5 stars to for some fucking reason. Why would he give MJF 5 stars?
Look, Dave Meltzer is a hugely important figure in my life as a wrestling fan. And I think this is going to sound patronising, an old manny from the 36-year-old podcaster. I think some people are genuinely too young to understand what it is Dave Meltzer gave to this community of ours, which is pretty much everything. Every word I'm saying, our entire lexicon, our entire semantic field was given to us by Dave Meltzer. And that man deserves our respect for mostly a lifetime. But, Dave, War Games 2021 was not better than CM Punk versus MJF, Dave. It just wasn't. A litany of 4 and 3s, 4 and a halfs were not better than CM Punk MJF, Dave. You got this one wrong, mate. I look forward to your next Observer to see all the news, all your reviews, all your thoughts, as I will, forever and ever and ever and ever. But you got that one wrong.
I'm still coming over the Darby Allin MJF one. Literally the best match on Full Gear.
What did he go for that?
4 and a half.
Yeah.
What a load of bollocks.
That was better than War Games too. Yeah, I just... Darby Allin and... I'll say I'm not a Darby Allin guy, right? But I'll say this for Darby Allin. I don't think Sammy Guevara is excelling in this role. And the second Darby Allin was in the ring with him, he felt like a bigger deal. So that's how wrestling works, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't fake that. So whether or not he's for me is really irrelevant. Darby Allin's a made man.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We got a promo from QT Marshall, ran down Hook, and what he, you know, people thinking wrong things about him. He's not the good guy that you think. He's not this hero of wrestling fans. He's a little sneak, a little cheat, a little git, basically. But he's got a new student to face Hook that we've never seen before. That match is set for next week. And we got an interview backstage. Uh-oh, wonder what's going to happen here. Chris Statlander chatting with Tony Schiavone. Barely gets any words out when in comes Leila Hirsch.
And God bless the United States.
To twat Chris Statlander from behind with a steel chair. And I thought, oh, bloody hell. And then she did that thing where she sort of threw the chair at Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander sort of caught it, or it was just lent against the head. And she just nailed her with a kick. And I thought,
hey, 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 you all right.
And then Red Velvet comes in to chase her off. Like, backstage nonsense that we've hated on, whether it's WWE or AEW, for a long time. But Leila Hirsch's intensity, let's say, won me over on this one.
Yeah, it's a classic Alan Partridge AEW segment, this. The interruption is a negative, so right now you need two positives. But then you get them, because the beatdown's really good, and then it's also really funny. So they kind of, by the end of it, you're completely one round, and you're back on that positive footing that you are with AEW that knows how to do this, even if sometimes they can't resist the bad habits. Decent segment. I'm nearly over the feud and ready to see what Leila Hirsch has got next. So don't saga this and drag it out any longer than it needs to be. If you want to have a street fight or whatever it is, wherever this is going in terms of a more violent payoff, we'll have it. But like, let's start spreading everybody's wings a little bit.
Absolutely. We then got Mercedes Martinez versus Thunder Rosa. Skip. Huh? Oh, sorry. I got confused. What? I just thought there was no point reviewing this because it went to a DQ in AEW.
Dearie cap, and we'll have a chat.
Okay.
And we'll have a chat.
Thunder Rosa, obviously very angry at Mercedes Martinez for everything that's gone on between those two. Comes out of the blocks, shotgun dropkick, dominates early on. She's just battering Mercedes Martinez at the beginning. Martinez made a fight back, though, hit a spine buster. We go to a break, And when we come back, Martinez still in control. Death Valley driver from the middle rope for a near fall. She attempts a crucifix powerbomb out of the corner, but Rosa slips out of it and nails her with something I can't remember the name of now. To try and escape, Mercedes Martinez wisely rolls out to the floor. Thunder Rosa goes after her, bounces her head off the steps, and she collapses next to the steps. Reaches underneath the ring, pulls out in pipe, and nails Thunder Rosa in the face with it for a disqualification.
Right. Obviously, I'm going to split up. We know why, but I'm going to split up some of this analysis with a segment later to come.
Yes.
I don't want to incur the wrath of Kenny Olivier, so I don't want any of my words to be isolated for his, let's be honest, sometimes piss funny Twitter account. But this DQ would be fine and was more fine as this show progressed. If only because the action was precision engineered to be as explosive as it was before the finish, if that makes sense. This was an absolute ripper. The time they had, they were absolutely battering each other. Everything was... like, everything was full of danger. Everything was full of piss and vinegar. Proper rivalry stuff that was really well agented. You didn't want to believe for a second that these had been backstage just waiting to have a friendly lockup. They wanted the fight. We talked about how the brawl in the running was, like, the best bit of the TBS Championship match because it was just so believable, as it was here within the confines of the wrestling match before Mercedes Martinez took it away with a disqualification. That attack will obviously... I'm going to praise it more when we get to the segment later on. But I will say this about disqualifications to acknowledge your point about a DQ. And for the Oliviers of this world, or anybody else out there that might be fiending for follows. The thing about this DQ, I will try and be balanced here. What follows later vindicates it. The nature of it, she had that pipe there all along. Her goal was to nobble Thunder Rosa with this pipe. And we're going to find out why that is. The nature of it off the back of an absolute ripper of a match when she's like, wow, we are kicking the out of each other here. I might need to pipe her in the head right there. Contextually, okay. The criticism is valid based on how close this was to the CM Punk one. AEW absolutely, once in a while, should use a disqualification for a narrative device because they've earned it. They massively, 2.5 years this promotion has been around, and we've had, what, like four now? The fact that we can't even keep count is amazing. Three, four? Hardly a handful, like literal handful at best. That's a real credit to them. This is probably too close to the CM Punk one.
I think that's fair.
It's a little bit too close. If you want to keep that prestigious, if you want to keep that meaning something, you do another one in a year's time, and then we all say, CM Punk one was like a year ago. More than within their rights, you know? Now, you've got to go a year. You've got to go. You've got to put that one back in the old lockbox. I'm not saying you need to shine Shane McMahon to get the key for it, but you've got to put it back in the lockbox and keep it there and not bust it back out, because this was absolutely too cheeky until it kind of half wasn't later on.
Yeah, I mean, I was being very hyperbolic, of course.
Loads of people will have hackled people. Yeah.
Like, have the floodgates open? I don't think they have.
No.
I'm not anticipating seeing any more before revolution.
Hold me to this. 1 in 6 months, and we can have a word. Like, okay, if this is 1 in 6 months, we'll have
there's to. There's another DQ before my birthday, basically.
Yes. If there's another DQ before your birthday, we have to do a roundtable entitled, is AEW dead? Question mark.
All I'm saying is SmackDown was a better show because there's no DQs. So, you know, I'm just asking questions here. I mean, there was a count out. And actually, now I think about it, there was a match that went 2 minutes and then they just made the match into a tag match and that went 2 minutes.
And Roman's theme goes 40. He said,
there
carry the
8
one.
Minutes on that show before anything happened.
To carry the two. And
the Naomi Sonya Deville thing's still going. Cesaro.
Well, Sonya Deville gave Naomi a title match. And she didn't even ask for one. When every time she asked for a title match, she gave her what she didn't want.
We're getting Drew McIntyre and Madcap Moss at the pay-per-view, which we literally had 2 pay-per-views ago.
Drew McIntyre's WrestleMania moment's probably going to be Baron Corbin.
Call it a draw. promo package for Serena Deeb. I bet you love that.
Yeah, really great. She's nails. That one, that like scream, Serena Deeb does, because she's angry at other wrestlers not being as good as her at wrestling, is why I watch wrestling.
And then we got actually the interview with Mercedes Martinez, who's getting asked, why did you try and kill Thunder Rosa with a lead pipe? When in comes Britt Baker and her friends. Mm. Oh, gone back to them, have you now, Britt? I see. There they are. Rebel, Reba.
Needed it, though, didn't we?
Jamie Hayter.
It was getting a bit nervy.
Just not going to mention it, are you? Just
like two, three weeks of them being gone. Yeah. It's getting a bit nervy, that. It was nice to see them all back together.
And then it's sort of explained that whilst Cargill was kind of on board with Mercedes Martinez attacking Thunder Rosa in their title knockout eliminator match thing, the person who signed the check was one Britt Baker, DMD. Don't have Tony Schiavone do that whilst he's just admitted to Harry Hitler. I'd say, but
he's
still.
Just a mate. So, like, we talk about this. I don't know, mate. You're just mate.
I just paid off someone to attempt to kill one of my opponents. DMD.
Yeah, but that money was made by doing some good dentistry. Yeah. Thank you, Britt.
Jamie Hayter can't believe all this. Why have you done that? She says. And Britt Baker says, well, you haven't really been getting the job done recently. And I thought, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Baker isn't happy that Martinez has just lost that match. And she says, look, don't lose to her again. Otherwise, your time in AEW will be shorter than the time at your last job. Don't make me sad.
Yeah.
I remember that. I got excited seeing her back in a wrestling ring. It's the first time I've seen her properly. So, yeah, obviously she fires up for that. And we get a match I didn't know I wanted until I saw it. Mercedes Martinez squaring up with Jamie Hayter. But thankfully, they stay amicable.
Yeah. So I love this, right? We try and be discerning on this podcast when we're not being complete rodeo clowns. And I'd like to think our listeners are the same. The wry eye that you might have cast upon this at the very beginning, I think was justified, because I think this feels more like a change in direction rather than a direction all along. You could feel that a bit, couldn't you? A pivot would be the kind way of putting it. They've looked at the bigger picture and they thought, should we just tweak that slightly? But that's okay, because I think the tweak is absolutely inspired. Let's break this down. So let's now pretend in kayfabe like that everything has happened as it's meant to, and that in fact Mercedes Martinez was never an associate of Jade Cargill and Smart Mark Sterling, but was Britt Baker's paid assassin who was there for her on night one, right? That implies that Britt Baker wants absolutely none of Jade Cargill and would quite like her to win the TBS title, thank you very much. So that's a pretty cool character choice, isn't it? As champion, she thinks, well, if she's got that belt, she's out of my business. So, brilliant. Like, if you, all of this is headcanon, by the way. Everything I'm about to say is complete headcanon, and it's whether or not you choose to apply this, knowing what we can maybe assume, that there's been a couple of little twists and turns before we've arrived at this very neat tying together of some loose ends. Britt Baker doesn't want any of Jade Cargill. There's match number one, eventually. Britt Baker versus Jade Cargill, okay? Number two is Britt Baker kind of being a bit of an arsehole to Mercedes Martinez for potentially not getting the job done. The idea that Martinez justifiably believed that taking out Thunder Rosa would be enough with the pipe suddenly vindicates the disqualification, doesn't it? Mercedes Martinez is there to earn her money, not as a wrestler, not worried about rankings, but as a hit woman. About getting paid.
Yeah, she went into the match, if you want to justify, she went into the match thinking, I'll kick her head in, then hit her with a pipe afterwards. Yeah. And then gone, oh, bloody hell, she's a bit much here.
I'm not here to win, I'm here to get paid. So why don't I try and, like, separate her shoulder with a pipe instead of getting the 1-2-3?
Yeah.
So that, again, if the CM Punk thing never exists, or this was a year after the Punk one, that DQ is pretty cool within the confines of this specific reveal, right? So, and again, it's really important to do that on the same show. If we had 5 or 6 days to simmer over that DQ, bigger problems. They've done it 2 segments later, so smart as well. So straight away, you've got Britt Baker versus Mercedes Martinez. As tension grows between the two, that she's, look, Thunder Rosa's probably going to beat her in the rematch, isn't she? So she's not going to get the job done. So Britt Baker's going to be none too pleased. So potentially, you've got Mercedes Martinez babyface turn and Britt Baker being absolutely scared of what Martinez is going to do to her, because at the first opportunity, she's negged her about what happened in her last job. Britt Baker versus Martinez, match number two. In the meantime, Jamie Hayter, feeling somewhat resentful of Britt Baker all of a sudden. You've pointed this out before. It's perhaps not the best move to be doing the Wardlow thing at the same time. So you've got a kind of backburner one. They've backburnered Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker, but they've never ignored it. Mm-hmm. So that was your tease of that match number three, Baker versus Jamie Hayter. Match number four, Britt Baker stirring up a little bit of grief between Martinez and Jamie Hayter. So maybe them two can have a match because, like, who's going to do the better job for Britt Baker? Four matches already, right? Before you've got to match number five, the biggest one, the one that matters the most, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa, because she's fought her in a street fight, she's lost, she's been petrified for a year, and now she's doing everything she can to try and keep the wolf from opening the door. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that is absolute right. Five matches there, right? Absolutely fantastic booking of something that doesn't even feel like it was the original idea. You cannot not love that. And the fact that it was all delivered really well and that every character feels like loyal to themselves and mm-hmm. true to themselves, like an absolutely tremendous minute and a half of pro wrestling television. Brilliant.
Well,
honestly, man, that sound needs to come with its own backing of boo 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 boo, because that's our version of knowing how can we get like an extra 20 seconds out just in case we need to roll through to get that advert midway through. Well, play the Mark Henry button. People might as well press the times 15 seconds thing in the podcast app when they hear Mark Henry flash up, because they know that when they press it once, he's still going to be talking.
Yeah, we had a back and forth between Jay Lethal and FDW champion Ricky Starks before their title match, which was simply excellent in the main event. Starts off with Lethal sending Starks into the ring barricade after a big dive to the outside. He hits it a second time, and then Powerhouse Hobbs, who's there at ringside holding the title for Starks, gets out of his chair, gets in Jay Lethal's face. Lethal tries to concentrate on the match, goes to send Starks into the ring post, but Starks brilliantly sort of dived, slid under the ropes, through the ring sort of thing, swings around the ring post and hits Lethal with a clothesline in a brilliant spot. Starks then missed a splash in the corner, though. Lethal goes for some pin attempts off roll-ups and cradles. And then Starks hit a huge sit-out powerbomb for a great near fall. They exchange strikes. Lethal hits Starks with a pump kick and an enziguri. Hobbs recognizes, uh-oh, he's in trouble, jumps up on the apron, but he got knocked down to the floor with a drop kick. Lethal then tries a tope on Hobbs on the floor. He just moves out of the way.
Great. Love that. Love that spot. It's the old Samoa Joe. Nope. Isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
really good.
But then out of nowhere, Dante Martin runs in from the crowd and springboard crossbodies out of the ring onto Hobbs, onto the outside to even the odds, let's say. We get back into the ring. Lethal hits a twisting cutter, goes for the lethal injection, but Starks avoids it. He sets up the J-Driller, but Lethal then counters that into a jackknife cover. And then what a finish this was. Lethal goes for his lethal injection, but when he bounces out off the ropes and jumps, Starks snatches him out of the air, drops him with the Rochambeau, and gets the 1-2-3. This has been shared all over social media. Understandably, Hamfler, a jaw-dropping finish to this title match.
Oh, God, yeah. The finisher counter deal in general, it's why people have the RKO so much, right? When you're doing, somebody's doing a move directly into the finisher, often it only takes 1 second of detachment between the move they're doing to the finisher you're trying to apply, and it doesn't hit quite as sweet.
Mm.
You know, like if you think about Evan Bourne landing in the RKO, he lands in it. There's not a moment where he scuffs onto his feet and then gets RKO'd. It has to be in the RKO, otherwise the whole idea is dead. The same applies here. If that catch is a catch and then he has to take 2 steps forward and then land the Rochambeau, it's an amazing like feat of athleticism, but it's not quite what we saw on Friday, which is just this gorgeous slick counter into a finisher all in one, utterly sublime execution of a really brilliant idea as well, a brilliant and brave idea, because the margin for error is pretty slim. I would say and like really really good that it happened, because all too often, especially on, I would say maybe like what we're now kind of accepting as AEW's B show, and at a time of the week that doesn't always suit everybody based on the ratings and based on the engagement in Rampage compared to Dynamite. It's the sort of thing that would have been good to great that might have been missed, but it was a finish so excellent that I dare say it convinced a few people to go back and watch the whole match.
Yes.
And they would have been glad they did, because look, I'm going to talk about it till I'm blue in the face. When I remember, and I don't always, the ick factor with Jay Lethal, as it is with Darby Allin, as it is with others, it's always going to be there. But the problem with wrestling is that they just make you forget.
Jay Lethal is a phenomenally challenging
This was
individual.
So good, you know, this was so, so good. Lethal, for years, was the guy. TNA made such a like success story of him as a bit of a novelty act, but he hid his amazing ability behind that Macho Man impersonation. And then he goes to Ring of Honor and he'd be kind of like, he'd been in Ring of Honor before, but he becomes a complete version of himself as a seasoned pro, and he wins the two titles simultaneously, and he's just got these incredible long runs. And the whole point of doing that in Ring of Honor is that you've got to have just enough of everything in ring to be able to justify it over and over again, a series of matches that fool people and that almost hide what you can do. And I thought he did that really well for Ricky Starks here. Starks has been, I don't want to say he's been short of a match like this, but we've gone a long time praising Ricky Starks, and due to his injuries and perhaps due to timing sometimes, there's just not been enough wow from That's Ricky fair, Starks. Yeah. This was that and then some, and you have to credit Jay Lethal with so much as that as well. Somebody's got to be a base for him. Somebody's got to be the glue a little bit at times when someone's as young as Ricky Starks. I thought there was just so much fluidity between these two that never once felt like they weren't in competition with one another. It never, just because it was beautiful at points, just because it was jaw-dropping at points, it never felt cooperative.
Mm.
And I think I was starting to feel that a little bit with the Starks highlight reel stuff was feeling a little bit on the generous side. And now we're right back to
absolutely
a main event that you've just looked at and thought, yep, every bit of you is a main eventer in waiting. Every bit of you is the pillar below the pillar, which that's kind of the most exciting tier in AEW, isn't it? When it was once Cody, Jericho, Moxley, I can't wait to see the pillars. Now it's become the pillars. So all of us fickle fans, you know, those guys, I want to watch the other pillars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I apply that as well to Hobbs and Dante Martin, who I thought's interference was pitched perfectly in this one. Never felt obtrusive. It never felt in the way. It was so cool and energetic and then gone, and it was back to the match. Now, like, I'm seeing a pattern of that in AEW that I think is very, very pleasing. Whereas if you're going to get a bit of outside the ring fluff, it's not going to necessarily directly feed into the finish. That's a difference between those Dynamites we were critical of.
Yes,
if you
exactly.
If you pepper that in the start or the middle of the match, it just feels like, well, yeah, the friends would be there. But you get the friends out the way, believably, and then you get on with the meat of the match. And like, I love that too. A really strong ending to a Rampage, of which I would say if it was on this week's Dynamite in particular, might have got lost. So again, from like a production standpoint for that live crowd, I think they measured it perfectly.
Absolutely. And before I forget, as we wrap up, I want to give a nod to something that Sid actually mentioned on the SmackDown review, because, well, we got fed up with talking about WWE. The bit in the break, you may not have seen this, with Ricky Starks getting fans at ringside to film him kicking the crap out of Jay Lethal. And they're like, I think their phone didn't work or something. Mm. I know the Brock Lesnar guy was there. And yeah, he made a mug out of all of them, which is always entertaining for me.
Good.
Who's your least favourite infamous wrestling fan?
Oh, man. Well, I'm assuming all of them listen to us. Yeah, so obviously. I don't want to be over... So, right.
My favourite is kid with his mum.
Kid, like, long-haired guy with his mum. Yeah, I'm a, obviously, as a bit of a lifer in this game, I'm a bowl-cut kid for life guy. Every time you see that screaming, gurning mug on a Mid-90s pay-per-view, you're in for a good time. Vladimir.
Are we getting the Vladimir documentary?
It's the new Tom McGee tape. Honestly, Vladimir's. I don't like... I feel bad because I don't know him as a person. I've just made my mind up from three or four very prominent appearances. I thought, you've got bad energy.
Can we say it at the same time? I think we're going to say it at the same time.
Well, before we do it, are we going to say the club name first?
Yes.
One, two, three. Everton shirt guy. Yeah.
Yes.
I get a real uneasy energy around him. And Kip Sabian, I think it was, kissing him, is the greatest moment in the history of this sport. Was it in the Hangman Page match when he got right in his face and just turned to give him a little kiss? And he was rattled beyond belief. Like the fact that...
A lot of Kip Sabian on these shows as well, by the way. I've noticed they're sort of starting to lean on it a little bit more, shooting it from behind.
And yeah, so you get the view of the... But like, is that... I don't know. Like, is it going to go anywhere? Is it good? Is it bad? I'm not sure. What do you think of it?
My concern is that they could just forget about this.
Mm.
And it, arguably, they haven't actually actively promoted any of it. I don't know with these sorts of things, because I don't know whether to commit to them, because, and this is true enough about the performer, do you remember when Leo Rush was some about business?
Yeah.
Like, he bought Limited.
A lot of people are a lot about stuff and then it just goes away, doesn't it? So yeah.
So I should be a wrestler.
Do you know what I do quite like about it? I think it would be fun if, so say he becomes outside the box, Kip Sabian, and that's his new gimmick. I mean, I've just...
Outside the box-like structure. We usually the full term.
Get it on the T-shirt straight away. Like Kip Sabian, he's outside the box. Like, he comes back and that's his whole deal now. And then one week he's feuding with somebody, let's say, and like Kip Sabian's back in the crowd. And Penelope Ford's had a match, and she's like, "Kip, I need your help." And the box comes off, and it's his rival. And you get, and they get the huge pop that you're like, he's, you've been sitting next to Kenny Omega all night, or whatever it is that he's been feuding with. You've been sitting next to him all night, and it's been, it was his rival, and that's like, there's a nice reveal in that.
Yeah.
What happens? Like, you want to get somebody over, you get that out of a box. Like, the old tried and true stuff. Doesn't matter the size of the box.
Yeah, fair. Right, well, let us know your thoughts on AEW Rampage this week on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. What I say, you can follow or both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett
At Michael Hamflett. More people engage with our AEW contents. This feels opportune to say, sponsor me for the Great North Front if you wish. There's a pinned tweet that's on my account. Loads of people that listen to us already have, and I'm immensely grateful. But sponsor me, and I'll be even nicer about the product that you love the most and never be critical of it. That's a lie. Sometimes I think AEW is rubbish.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. I'm not doing anything for charity, but if you wanted to like Venmo me $5, I'll take it as well. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Sound machine doesn't come cheap.
Make a button just asking for cash. Just instead of your Twitter at the end, just start playing that. Can I have Fiverr?
Well, seems like you're going to have to pay me for some more tweets. Honestly, I'm still annoyed that I don't get to be able to charge people to look at my tweets. Remember my Aesop, get the Fables tweet.
I have done some stupid, stupid stuff in my life. But leaning on a fatherly instinct of mine and really patting you on the back for that is maybe the stupidest. Hey, Wilborn, great tweet earlier on. If I could put those words back in my mouth, because I feel partly responsible for this. And this thing that hits our office sometimes, walking down a corridor. Get the Fables. Oh, he's doing it again. Doing it again.
You get it, because it's like the... Anyway.
I see what you've done there. Oh, now I get it.
Now I get it.
I just thought it was a Dudley's joke. Brilliant. You know what it is? You know, it's the scorpion that kills the snake, isn't it? It's very literally one of his fables.
Yeah.
I've been stung by the scorpion. Like, you should have said, like, I'm a scorpion.
You know, I also like the fact, when I was younger, and there was they're talking about the race, and they were like, oh, it's ridiculous. How would the hare get so distracted? He's number one. How's he getting distracted and letting the ball drop? And then I think, oh, yeah, I'm the hare.
These nuts.
That's how the tortoise passes me. Don't know which other podcast is the tortoise, but someone needs to stop me.
One more safe reward season. Clip it. Put it in the file.
Put it in the
egg.
I don't know what's going on. What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. The SmackDown review is already available. We'll be back later on with the Monday Night Raw preview as well. But for now, this has been the Rampage review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.